Welcome to The Ether. Today is Wednesday, March 9th, 2022. This episode of The Ether is brought to you by Glow Yield. Glow Yield is the ecosystem of Terra decentralized apps like Lotto and Creators, all powered by DeFi Yields. Glow Creators helps artists and influencers give their fans exclusive perks through membership, NFTs, and more. Glow Lotto is a PrizeLink savings account with a weekly chance to win the big jackpot. Tickets are free and perpetual, which means there's zero chance to lose money. Be sure to follow Glow Yield on Twitter and join the Discord community to stay up to date with all the glowing projects and check them out online at glowyield.com. This episode of The Ether is also brought to you by Talus. Talus Protocol is the NFT platform for independent artists on Terra. Talus helps to provide artists with the tools and resources needed to transition from traditional art into the NFT world. With their V1 launch coming soon, Talus will be the place to see real-world art reflected on Terra. Be sure to join their Telegram and follow Talus on Twitter for updates on their roadmap, validator, and other Talus news. Find your next favorite artist on talus.art. Terra Spaces appreciates the support from all our sponsors. Today on The Ether, part three of a three-part, hopefully, CeFi space, Luna Terra again. Let's take a listen.
Hey, Sugar and Jason, Sugar, you want to hop on?
Yeah, sure. Sophia, I wonder if sort of, I'd like to hear your thoughts, not financial advice, but where do you sort of see now maybe the floor is in the bottom? Like, I know in the past you talked about all the VC money that came in at 50, moving day averages bumped it to 55. Where is your perspective on sort of the potential bottom now from a conservative number?
I think if I had to guess, I'm guessing, by the way, that we're not going to like double top here at 100-ish. My guesstimation is that over the next couple of months, there's a good tendency to continue to sort of drive upward first. And then, like, what I would like to see happen is, just judging by all of this past action, is I would like to see that we go to some significantly higher number, and then the new low is somewhere above 100, so that we're not going back down to this level again. So I would like to see that type of price movement. It reflects more typical adoption level price action for that to occur and not retest twice. In other words, not retesting yet again the $100 level would be the most sort of bullish sort of scenario to happen.
Now, but if you're asking the question to consider if you should be, you know, doing, because, you know, like the Luna Omics strategy where, you know, you're looping, I would just recommend or just advise prudence with that, because, you know, we could have that. And the last thing you want is to be liquidated. So consider leverage carefully, because it's a tool that can be used, but I equate it to fire. It can keep you warm or it can eat you alive and burn you to a crisp.
I was going to say, Stephanie needs to say like the exact opposite of what he wants to happen. So then the exact opposite.
What will happen is the opposite of whatever,
like,
I say.
You need to say, I want a double top and I want it to go back down. And then, like, there's no double top and it's going to fly.
Well, but why don't we just briefly review exactly what I did on the way up to $100 the first time. And then how I handled the downward pressure this on the way down. And then, like, what I'm doing now on the way up, and then, like, maybe how I'm planning it out. Because that probably gives you some brief insight in terms of, like, why I did what I did. So, okay. So on the way to 100, I didn't know where the top was going to be. The maximum looping that I ever did of my Luna, which, and by looping, I mean, like, going and getting bonded Luna, then sticking it in Anchor Earn, and then getting even more UST, and then getting more bonded Luna, and et cetera, right? To sort of max that out. The most I did that was back when Luna dropped from about $35, I think it was, to maybe like around 22 to 24, right around that time. I wasn't fully versed in all the different arbing strategies and whatnot at the time. And by the way, I had substantial excess capital outside of Terra, to which if there was any kind of liquidation risk, I would be able to handle myself, right? So this is not like, this is not all of my money going all in and doing that. So that's an important distinction to make here. But then that was where I did the most of it. And obviously now that Luna's closer to $100, you know, I can say, well, I'm glad I did that, because now I have, like, over the various times I've done this, I probably have doubled the amount of Luna that I would have otherwise. I didn't go as hardcore, maybe as Shigeo does, you know, Lunanomics in this regard on the way up. So then what happens? So every single up and down move, every time between from then until $100, I was basically using some of my yield to get more Luna on the way up. And then on the way down, the deeper the drop, the more I would again use my newfound collateral as like, you know, dry powder, essentially. Just think about this. I was using my borrowing capacity as dry powder for bottoms. How do I know when I've reached a bottom? I don't. So that's why I just take slightly increasing amounts, technically exponentially rising amounts of borrow power on the way down. So what would happen between, like, let's say, you know, $100 where we were all the way down to, we went to like 45 ish, I think. I had a little bit that I got at 95 on the way down. It was just a tiny amount that I, because, and the reason I did that is because there was like a half decent ARB discount. Like, I got a couple of percent off there. So I'm like, all right, fine, I'll get some. And then in the 80 to 90 range, I got a bit more. In the 70 to 80 range, I got even more. But again, I still had a lot of borrow power left over. So it wasn't anywhere near like max capacity. I didn't think we'd get down below $50. It actually surprised me that we went that low. So it is important to like plan for those possible surprises and whatnot. So, but really under $50, I started going a little bit berserk and, you know, considering maybe more of what you'd consider looping. But I do consider every single bonded Luna buy, though, a possible collateral, right? I'm going to use that to manage my collateral. So I go ahead and add it on the way down so that it's managing my LTV and it creates more borrowing capacity on the way down. So I did that, and I think the largest buy I made was right at about $45. I just pulled out all the stops. I took extra Luna I had sitting around. I had some sitting around in Nexus. I had some extra cash somewhere, and I brought some more in. I went to every single exchange I could find that I had cash laying around. I'm like, all right, I should buy more Luna. And I just completely pulled out all the stops under $50, right? Because my conviction is really high. And I'm like, you know what? I already know that we're going to get back to 100 because we already made it there once. That's how crypto works. So at this point, I might as well just go nuts. And so I used a substantial amount of my leverage. I used a substantial amount of extra capital, and I just, you know, got as much as I could. Simultaneously.
Just one question. When you say, you broke up just a little bit, you said, okay, at what price point were you thinking about this once we had retraced from 100?
So like 40? Yeah, more serious amounts of investing is pretty much anywhere in crypto where something dips below 40%, I start getting more serious.
Okay.
Everything else is just like nibbling and whatever, right? Like, it's not anything big.
So somewhere around $40 to $50, you're thinking, all right, now it's starting to get time for me to become more serious with my leverage.
Yeah. So, I was starting to use some leverage at every level, but tiny amounts, right? Like, I'm escalating exponentially. So if my first buy is $100, then 10% more, it might be like $200. And then, you know, 10% more down, it might be $400. So that kind of scale. So that way I'm leaving dry powder available. And I consider my borrowing capacity my dry powder for the extreme bottoms, not for, because remember, to make an exponential purchase, you have to have a lot suddenly, right? So you either keep that in cash or you're going to have that available as collateral. Your collateral becomes your dry powder, essentially, as leverage. That's how I used it.
So and what did you end up leveraging up to? Like, what was your LTV ratio at the bottom there? In the
So, but even at the very bottom, my LTV, I could still go down to like, I could manage it down to around $30. So it wasn't, it's still not as degen as a lot of people tend to get. Like, so because I want to be able to do this safely. So even if I have to bring more capital in, I just did so, right? Anyway, so what did I do? So you get down to that range, and then not only that, but the bonded Luna rate, remember, you could get like almost a 2 to 3% discount at those crazy bottoms. So I was able to get, I think, my biggest buy in at $43. So I think the thing for people to realize is you can't know where the bottom exactly is, irrespective of how much technical analysis or other techniques you use. You just have to have a general concept of strategically deploying the capital if you were to get there. And if you don't get there, like let's say Luna's price never did that. Like let's say we went from 100 to 200 and I didn't have a chance to do any of this. That would have been a decision I would have just simply lived with, right? I didn't know we were going to go back down below $50. I thought it could have easily gone, we could have easily gone off to 200 and dropped to 120 or something like that. That could have happened too, right? I don't know. I don't know the future. I don't know how many people on the planet are getting ready to buy. I don't know any of that shit, right? So you just have to take the downside and you have to decide what you're going to do with it. Like even now, like let's say now I've made some substantial buys down in the $40 range. Like, should I even bother getting any more? Number one, like that's one question I should ask myself. Should I just simply dollar cost average from now on using my yield? That's a possibility. Should I continue to exert some kind of leverage if we start dropping again? Oh, by the way, the last substantial buy again that I made was right at about $75. And I used some leverage at that point after we had already done like a 96. We went to what, 95, and then we did a pullback to, I think, 75-ish.
Yeah.
Again, I caught almost right near the bottom, but I definitely caught the bottom because I got the bonded Luna ARB, and that was like around almost 2.5%, which was ridiculous. So my actual buy came in at $73. So that was my last substantial leveraged buy. And even then, like the amount of leverage I still had available was like, I only used maybe about 20% of my available leverage there, right? So I'm not going too crazy. I'm using my, so because I know I don't want to lose Luna because the Luna bonded Luna ARB is free money, right? I know that if I stick B Luna and Nexus, it's free money for me. Why would I want to risk that by going overboard, right? So I want to basically try to optimize those borrows as best I can while still having major LTV management capabilities. And that's the way to go here. Anyway.
Has anyone, I know you've been talking a lot of protocols, has anyone talked about like a DCA bot like on their protocol that you could just like lock, you know, $1,000 and
that's what Tundra and Nexus team and everybody we were talking about is this idea of like rebalancer vaults, for example, where let's say, because here's the thing, if you're borrowing money, right, you want to be in a position where that money can be used to A, manage LTV, B, be relatively safe because you're borrowing off of it, right? But C, get additional exposure to Luna. The problem with the method I'm talking about just on its face is that A, it assumes that I want to monitor this and catch every bottom. Whereas if you do a rebalancer bot, the difference is, and it's similar to an LP position, but a little bit different, is you don't have to monitor anything. You basically get more Luna with all the volatility that happens 24/7, like 365 days a year. So the thing is, a rebalancer bot can actually be a good way to deploy capital because you're basically 50% cash anyway the entire time, and right, only 50% in Luna. And what's even more fascinating with on Terra is, imagine like one side is using bonded Luna and the other side is like, let's say most of your money, like Nexus keeps it in the background in AUST instead of in UST. So when the price comes closer to where it needs to be deployed, it's converted from AUST back to UST. But imagine the entire time you're earning 20% yields in AUST, or you're earning Luna's base yield. And on top of that, you're getting the arbitrage yield, that's the magic that we're trying to like ultimately create.
So like very rudimentary version that everybody can do that everybody can do right now that kind of mimics this is be in an LP position with UST and Luna. That's one thing, because you know, as the price of Luna falls, then your UST is being used to purchase Luna. And when you break apart the LP, you're going to have more Luna at the end. That's something that Lunomics talks about a lot, and that's part of his strategy.
So one proposal, what Safi mentioned, so only thing, if it's possible anyway, to include everywhere the pairs with C Luna, N Luna, and B Luna, that would be fantastic. You can just
board
off all those
locked
Lunas.
Well,
but, can I clarify something? With Nexus, right? Specifically with Nexus, like we'll just use that as an example. Because I'm getting PSI tokens, it's not really DCAing down for me. I'm getting more Luna, right? Like,
yeah.
I'm looking for something that I want to go put in a vault, you know, put 10K in, and it just dynamically cost average down for me. And then also will then manage my LTB like all together.
Spectrum is Spectrum and Apollo are both creating an N Luna vault auto compounders, which is going to take the N Luna and roll it back into more Luna. So you can take pretty much the yield that you get on Nexus and just get it back.
And wait for what's the name? Spec Finance or something? Seek Finance. Sorry.
It'll be live in like three days.
Yeah, and you can do options now.
What we're really excited about is a bunch of stuff that we're really excited about. I want to talk about what CeFi mentioned earlier, the grid on-chain grid bot. But another thing that maybe this is alpha. I don't know actually if this is alpha or not. But we're going to be – I know Jose has mentioned this before. So we'll be working with Mars. Nexus will be working with Mars to – create leveraged yield farming vaults with N Luna specifically, where users will be able to basically like lever themselves up with N Luna.
Why not Luna then? Why Nexus?
Just specifically talking about the N Luna vault, right? So we'll have a leveraged N Luna vault strategy available on Nexus that's powered through the Red Bank on Mars, where users will be able to get more yield than they're able to get like pretty much anywhere else. And so we're super excited about that because we think that it's going to be a vacuum for Luna and a lot of people are going to use that service in specific. So
another, a proposal on Astroport that's out too for people that are interested is there's going to be a Luna bonded Luna vault, and the B Luna's yield you're going to be able to claim, which is awesome because that was being wasted before. But anyway, that's a side note.
Yeah. So that's another thing. The on-chain grid bot it's a way for you to basically express an opinion in the market. Like you think that there might be chop or you think there will be volatility. And what the grid bot will do is it will allow you to profit on volatility, even, you know, small movements in volatility.
And when grid. So,
yeah, when grid. So the thing about grid bot, and actually Steffi, we should, I'll follow up with you after this because I've been meaning to message you about it. Grid bot is actually pretty complicated product to build because we need to
grid's harder to build.
It's way more complicated than I thought it was, Steffi, when you first were talking about it.
Compared to a rebalancer, which is going to be more simple, probably.
We've mocked up some early kind of like analytics to see like what type of volatility would be profitable for that to be deployed in, and you know how we think the initial parameters for it could be set up. Although the way that we're thinking about it is it's probably going to be flexible. So users will be able to like determine, you know, how they want their buys and sells to be set up. We're getting to the point where we're ready to talk to you about kind of like the next steps there. But it's probably going to be Q3 before the grid bot is up and live. There's a couple things that that the Nexus team needs to ship first to get off of our roadmap and then move on to the LP money market, which we'll be working on.
By then, though, you might have more possible like primitives you can use. Because think about it. Like, let's say you used the Astroport Luna B Luna incentivized pool token, which is basically auto compounding, plus it's getting the B Luna yield auto compounding, right? So you could use these kind of things, and you can claim the rewards, and you could do a rebalancer against the price of Luna that way. So yeah, there's just nutty ways you can, like, there's a lot of nutty permutations coming about that, like, spark the imagination for sure. Actually, yeah. I think Neptune was here too. And I know Jason and Analytic had a question, but maybe while Neptune's here, maybe, like, you guys can talk about what you're doing.
Yeah, Neptune can go ahead and jump on. Yeah, I'll wait.
Yeah, I don't know if they're AFK right now. Or,
yeah, I'm here. Can you guys hear
me? Yeah, go ahead. Yeah,
yeah, great.
What's up?
Yeah, I don't want to step anyone's toes here. I just wanted to mention that we're a leveraged yield farming platform as well. We integrate rebalancing on chain for leveraged yield farming. We integrate with the Anchor platform. Sounds like you guys are pretty interested in more leveraged strategies, and that's what we're trying to offer. So part of the systems that we're developing and integrating is diversification in the investment through our leverage. So not only can you take advantage of farming the Anchor protocol or its ANK tokens and the earn rewards, we're also expanding across the Terra ecosystem so that you can leverage and invest in multiple types of strategies and protocols in Terra.
Is with Neptune, are you going to be having, like, how does that mechanism work? Is it in the form of, like, a token that accrues value, or is it in the form of more of a vault? And the reason I ask that is because, like, when talking with Tundra here, you know, like, if it's in the form of some kind of a tokenized system, you can almost, like, create systems on top of systems. Like, you can do volatility arbitrage systems on top of, like, almost like liquid staked vault tokens, for lack of a better word. Maybe you could, like, shed some insight as to how the user experience, what's that going to feel like on Neptune, and then what kind of primitives, if any, are we going to get?
We wanted to simplify our user interactions. And we're not creating a token or derivative. So when you come into one of our vaults with a B asset or any other type of collateral that Anchor will be offering in the future, we auto compound all rewards back into that asset. So we really simplify it, and we didn't want to endanger the Terra ecosystem by creating another derivative. But, like, the volatility on so much leverage and so much derivatives can be kind of scary, but at the same time, it's a lot of fun to play with these things. And there's a lot of really interesting concepts to build out of that. So yeah, when you come to the Neptune platform, you choose a strategy that you want to invest in. Any profits that you earn through that are just compounded back into the Luna or the Ethereum at this point.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, I'm all about safety. Like, my goal is capital preservation primarily. It's almost like I would like to see my yield going into something interesting. Like some of the folks here, you know, we're at a point where Luna's price is high. We have yield coming from our Luna, and now we want to be able to use that yield safely in a way without endangering our original Luna oftentimes. And we want to be able to sort of deploy that in a way that can make us the max amount of, like, whether it's volatility ARB yield or any other type of yield, it's like we're trying to deploy the existing safe money that we already have coming in to do other things. I think that's at least that's what I want to do.
And another thing that I've seen Kinetic Money talk about is like a vault where you deposit your UST and the yield from the UST is used to buy more Luna. I think that's genius, because, or brilliant, because I don't do anything with my UST. Like it's hard to peel out what your yield on that UST and Anchor Earn is. And so if you just were able to just sync that into something where it's pulling out the daily yield, and then that's dollar cost averaging Luna, that would be great too. So I think shout out to Kinetic Money for that.
Yeah, but between what Neptune's doing, what Nexus is doing, what Kinetic has available, I feel like there are a lot of good avenues for fairly safe, I would say, composability, in that you can provide, I think, certain sort of packages where the average retail user can really easily and visibly see what their risks are and what the time horizons are. And like, my core tenet is to create systems that maybe generate more Luna for yourself, but don't sacrifice in any serious way the Luna that you already have. Now, that might mean that you have to sacrifice time, or, you know, it might take, these might be things that require patience. In other words, none of these things are going to make you an infinite amount of money instantaneously. But the idea is that you can optimize time and minimize risk. And for what, you know, people want, like some of the people say, well, I don't really know how all these different protocols work. Well, sure. All Lucky needs, or All I Need, or whoever, or Donku, to make a half decent video on how to use a system that is pretty safe for most people is, or Lucky's grandmother, whatever. All we need is like some relatively simple vaults that do a fairly low risk strategy, and then you could take those and stick them on like an XDeFi wallet, for example, or, you know, Alice Finance or whatever can interpret that and deploy that without even having to like expose everyone to all the DeFi buttons, right? And having to figure all this shit out.
Totally. Or even like in the Anchor interface itself, like because this would help with the borrow side and the yield reserve, but like having strategies from different protocols available within the Anchor UI. So when users go to like borrow on Anchor, they're prompted with like, hey, do you want to do this strategy, or do you want to like, and maybe it's just like a few curated strategies, but just having some way for users to like deploy funds in kind of like a seamless way, I think, is something that we've talked to Anchor about a little bit, and I know that they're kind of thinking about. So that's like another thing where it's not totally extrapolated to the same level, Sefi, where what you're talking about, which is like, you know, integrating into Alice for normies and stuff like that. But that's just another thing where, you know, we can get more sophisticated, like, you know, strategies deployed into apps that people are familiar with, like Anchor, for example. So anyway, this has been super great. Thanks for putting this Spaces on, Sefi, and for everybody who's hosted it. I got a dog that is looking at me like she needs to get taken out for a walk. So I'm going to...
Yeah, good having you.
I'm going to drop, but appreciate it again, and congratulations on all of our continued progress. I mean, obviously the end is not today or anywhere in sight, but it just, you know, it feels good when we get some of these milestones and everybody's talking about it. It's a nice moment to reflect, and we should be thankful for the wins along the way, because God knows how mentally exhausting this space can be and just how much it can require from all of us. So anyway, take some time to just be like thankful and kind of reflect on everything. And I mean, 2022 is going to be a great year, and 2023 is going to be even better. So a lot of exciting things to come. But anyway, thanks again, guys. Appreciate the
cool
time.
Good catching up with you again.
Talk soon.
Jason, Analytic, I've been waiting here a while. Jason, you want to hop on?
Yeah, what's up, guys? Hey, I'm in the car, so if the reception's bad, let me know. But I was just
pretty good so far.
Okay, great. $100 is awesome. I wanted to share one quick, I guess, good news story. So, you know, just in terms of onboarding new lunatics, you know, as we sort of dipped down after December, I continue to, you know, recruit and I've always used Anchor as really step one in that savings yield. And there's one guy that I got to bring over. He basically moved most of his cash savings over to Anchor, you know, to where it was a few hundred thousand dollars. And he's just started to, you know, I basically use the argument of, you know, you might as well buy 10,000 of Luna, you know, as it was at 80 or 70 or 60 or 50. And by the end of it, he ended up with about 1500 Luna. And two things were funny. Number one, it was funny when, you know, when people put that much money at risk, they're going to start doing a lot more research. Like I think we all have at one point or another. And when he starts sending me Seffy tweets, I just feel like the universe has come full circle, and it kind of makes me laugh. So, you know, I told him to follow you. I told him to follow some other folks. And so he's knowledgeable now. He understands the mechanism for UST to Luna and all that. But he told me this morning he's up about 50 or 60 grand. So, you know, just great news story. And you know, when you can help onboard people and they catch the timing right, you know, there's really nothing better.
That's the thing. Usually those who are sort of in the know, typically, and who are doing some of the things that, you know, that we do, like, you know, dollar cost averaging in or dynamic dollar cost averaging in, like when I'm at the point where I'm making like a 4x size buy, like four times multiple or eight times multiple size buy, then that's when I'm like texting all my friends and family if I want them to get anything. That way, like, they get the benefit of the time that I've already wasted watching the price, right? Like, because it takes some effort to watch all of this, right? So at least then they get the free benefit of you know catching some pretty good bottoms right at that point. And the beauty of that is, like, they don't have to pay attention at the rest of the time. All that happens to their portfolio is it's sort of largely up only. And they're comfortable and happy, which is a lot easier to deal with than like sad and unhappy, obviously. So, because you hate to be the one responsible for, you know, telling someone to get something and then it goes lower. Which, you know, what I do is I tell them to ignore that noise, or at least be ready to buy more if it goes lower. And I coach them on all that first before I even have to make before friends and family have me make one buy. I'm like, look, you know, these things can go down. This is what you're going to do if they go down. Be prepared for that and prepare some capital for that. And then, like, yeah, go ahead, Lucky.
I said, you're very nice. I call people right before I sell and say, you got to buy right now.
Which is probably the wise choice. Yeah.
Exit liquidity.
Yeah. Use your family as exit. Analytic. Yeah. Did you have a comment?
Yeah. Hey. Yeah. Thanks for having me on the stage. So great Twitter space. I've learned a lot from you guys. So I've been in Luna for about 10 or 12 months now. So consider myself relatively early and very familiar with the ecosystem. And it's been a good ride. I had my skepticism when I got into Luna, but of course, but being in TradFi, I noticed what Novogratz was doing and how he had taken a pretty big position, if I understand it right, and so followed him in. So it's worked out well. So two questions for the community here. One is, we've seen the volatility and the ATR go up, right? Lunanomics talks about this a lot. I think he covered this in his last masterclass, where seeing the average true range or say the volatility of Luna has been going up. You know, we were at 75, right? On March 7th, and here we are at about 100 on March 9th. So when you're seeing $25 moves in 2 days, the question I have for the group here is, this is not FOMO level. So it's not that the price is going up because there are a whole bunch of people entering the ecosystem. We are not at that. I think everyone agrees we're not at that stage yet. So even when the market moves up 3% and we are up 15%, or market moves up 5%, we are up 20% in 2 days. The question is what do you think is driving? Is it primarily the USD burn and the fall in supply in Luna that's driving these massive moves in 2 days? And it's not really retail adoption, I think, like that. We know that because the wallet count is not going up at the same rate. Just curious, how do you guys think about it? Because if we are at this stage now, when it's FOMO, we might be moving $100 a day. So just would like to hear people's thoughts on this. I had a question on Anchor.
Yeah, I have a simple rule regarding volatility. Volatility is proportional to growth. So you want to see this kind of volatility. It's actually very important. It means that a huge amount of excitement is in the air. It means that lots of people are exerting leverage both on the bottoms and the tops. It means that like just a lot of capital energy or what have you is showing up. And these are the kinds of circumstances with extraordinary volatility comes the just the mega moves upward. So I not saying it's going to happen, but I am always I definitely do not exit with this kind of volatility. I want to be completely fully in. So I don't have anything in UST at the moment. It's all in Luna at the moment. And I just am managing my collateral to get more if I can, if it goes down, but I'm no longer worried about it going down. We've already established several sort of like volume floors in the $50 to $100 range where you've, you know, spent a few months to sort of consolidate, which is great. Basically any asset that becomes increasingly scarce becomes increasingly volatile simultaneously. It's just the way that the leveraged markets end up sort of like batting the asset around all over the place. I think this is all good. Like, I don't think there's anything problematic about it. In fact, I'm more bullish that we pulled back to like $40 range. And the reason is because when you do any set of Fibonacci extensions, what you'll notice is if you've ever drawn Fib extensions from a local top, like 103 down to like 45, you'll notice that the extensions to the upside actually spread out much wider. I don't know if you've done this before, but if no one's seen this, like, it's extremely important to do as a mental exercise. So when you go and you open up a TradingView chart and you use the Fibonacci extension tool and you pick like the very top, like $103, then you can now easily pick the very bottom, which was at, you know, 45 or something like that. Anyway, you draw a tool that pulls down the retracement fibs, but also it'll give you the extension, which gives you a little bit of insight into possible forward-looking action. And what you'll notice when you use that tool is the deeper the dip, the bigger the rip. Does that happen? Why it happens is because the lower it goes, the more that you expunge weak hands to start with, people that are like, you know, willing to sell, you destroy leveraged longs. And then what you do is you bring in new spot capital who's willing to buy at those discounts. And, you know, for reasons that, you know, have probably more to do with human psychology than anything else, then you get the extreme moves to the upside. So this is like why, for example, with Bitcoin, when it went from 20,000 to 3,000, it was a $17,000 retracement. In traditional stocks and whatnot, when you form like a cup and handle, like which we have now, usually with stocks, you can imagine usually a measured move would be the depth of the cup. So like in Bitcoin's case, 20,000 down to 3,000, you expect a $17,000 move to the upside when you break 20K. That's pretty normal. These measured moves from a cup and handle sort of breakout. So right now for Luna, for example, we've gone from, let's just use round numbers, $100 down to $40, and that's a $60 retracement. So it would be a very rational market move for price to go from 100 to 160 pretty readily. That's without any kind of FOMO. That's with nothing going on, right? That's just a normal move this is why some technical analysis understanding helps. Understanding a little bit about how human beings think helps. So it's not like technical analysis like it can predict the future. It just gives you rational expectations for what is common in financial markets. So 160, I would say, would be like shrug shoulders, whatever. It's just completely normal. In fact, institutions and whatnot could easily buy Luna and drive it to that level, like, you know, heavy buyers. But if you're talking about like retail FOMO and such, oftentimes that emerges somewhere in that process. Like, you know, you'll pass 150 or something, and retail might actually push it even higher, you know, than that level, and could push it to like the 200-300 level. These kinds of things can happen. So as far as like managing volatility and whatnot, I think it's more relevant One, just for expectation management. Two, if you're using leverage, obviously it's relevant because then you don't want to be liquidated. So I'm always cognizant of the fact that, like in crypto, a 50% down move for God knows what reason can happen anytime. And therefore, you really should not, you know, like you shouldn't use leverage more than you can lose. But also, why lose any at all? Like, unless you really want to gamble, I totally agree.
In fact, I'm an options trader as well in equities and BTC and ETH, and I've explored options on Luna, and I don't think it's particularly a good idea given how volatile this asset is. And of course, we don't have native Luna options on Luna per se, but you can do it on Solana right now. You have to transfer your Luna over the wormhole. And people got burned over there. I can
imagine they did.
Analytic. Yeah, I think sure. Also to add, like, I think to, you know, the original question of what we've seen over the past weeks, we've also seen other chains kind of start falling. I mean, obviously the whole Phantom thing. And I think money is continuing. Yeah. I think smart money is continuing to see the writing on the wall. And that also probably has helped with the growth of what we're seeing.
I totally agree. I think this has been the year where sort of the L1 winners are being decided, if you will, by the market. And I think there'll be two or three that, you know, besides ETH, of course, which is sort of holding strong right now. But I think Terra and maybe Avalanche, Solana, somewhat less so. Even, you know, I think the market's sort of sniffing out who's going to be in the top
five. Yeah, the Cosmos network effect is very important too. I mean, just think about it. Like, Crow is on Cosmos, right? And look how much advertising energy they're exerting. And anytime Crow's price went up, it caused all of the Osmosis based coins to essentially be buoyed upwards as well, because those are the trading pairs against Crow, and all of those coins get essentially bought by the AMM, right? If Crow's price goes up too quickly, like in an impermanent loss sort of context. But like, you have a lot of growth catalysts on Cosmos. It's just like, Osmosis is amazing. The relative inflationary yields are kind of high, but they're sort of like somewhat sustainable. Then you've got all of the interconnectedness of Cosmos-based chains that lead to network effects. Yeah, the whole thing has been an interesting experience. I just don't think, I know that there's people that are fans of Phantom and this and that. I just don't see their network effects getting to the same level so easily. Because Lucky uses a lot of these. What do you think?
And Dot as well, right? There was this narrative around composable and these sort of interconnected blockchains and Dot. I think that hasn't panned out. So the Dot holders are going to realize at some point that Cosmos is a better bet if you're betting on a...
Yeah, I have a little pile of Dot that I'm just earning yield on and just riding it out to see how things go. But yeah, I haven't gone very big with my Dot position at all. Like, I bought some early on and sold it like at a nice profit, and then just sort of like left some for yield, but that's about it.
I use them for the people, Seffy, so I can help tell people what not to do. Let me tell you.
So yeah, Lucky tries to try out all the chains so that he can get wrecked and then tell everyone what not to
do. My current strategy is on Solana and some liquidity pool with UST to see how it goes. So far, so good. I am mining Luna right now, so that is kind of fun.
Yeah, and Lucky as a kid had dreams of growing up to be a test dummy, and so he never got that dream fulfilled. So this is what he does now.
Yeah, so some of us are interested also in the liquidity pools on Thorchain too, which could be nice for the what's interesting to me there is not so much the UST pairing of Luna, because I don't like the impermanent loss of on Luna. I just don't want that. But what's interesting to me is the Luna Rune pair could be really interesting long run. Because the reason why it's interesting is, so you have a dual deterministic pair of coins, right? And then you have, let's say Luna goes up, then you wind up with more Rune. Wonderful. If Rune goes up, you wind up with more Luna. Well, that's wonderful too. So like, awesome, right? And then you get whatever incentives on either side. So LP pairs to me, they matter to me only if both coins in the pair are, you know, world changing types of coins. I don't want to pair Luna with something that doesn't have good long term capabilities, because then I'm just losing Luna for no reason, right? So it's an interesting kind of concept. The unfortunate thing about just simply pairing Luna with things is that you lose the yield from your Luna, whereas it would actually be even more interesting, I think, to have a bonded Luna pair where you can actually keep your UST yield on top of the fact that you're yielding off of your LP. That'd be even more amazing. But it's harder to implement that because bonded Luna is not a IBC token. It's a CW20 token.
So, Sefi, on that point, when you do a Luna B Luna pair on Astroport or TerraSwap, where does the B Luna yield go? Do you get it, or like if you were holding in your wallet, or do you?
Right now on TerraSwap, you do not get it. Right now on Astroport, you do not get that yield. You do get the incentivized AMM on Astroport. You get the transactional yield on the TerraSwap, both of which can be okay. But what's going to happen is with Astroport, they're adding the ability to take that bonded Luna yield and accrue that as well. I don't know what the final mechanism is going to look like. I don't know if that yield is going to then auto compound into your Luna, which would be awesome, or what it's going to do. But that looks really, really good to me. Because it doesn't make sense as an LP provider to be giving up the yield on yield-bearing assets. It just sounds stupid to me. So that's the problem with a lot of LPs, that they're not optimized fully yet to be able to liquid stake essentially simultaneously. And it'd be nice to be able to do that and auto compound that yield as well. DJ Ed, did you have comments, thoughts, and Nick after that?
Hey, Sefi, thanks once again for the great content that you're providing in the community. I had a question earlier. Can you hear me, by the way?
Yeah, you're good. Go ahead.
Okay, great. And I can attest to the fact that when I am a speaker, you do break off, or whoever's talking, you break off, as opposed to when I was a listener, I was able to hear you clearly without any problem whatsoever. My question was regarding the reason why you guys understand that the stablecoin UST, the government can't go after it or can systemically freeze it, like they can say, for instance, a backed stablecoin like USDC or Tether, for instance. Can you? I guess I'm missing something. What's the basic concept as to why they can freeze one and not the other?
Yeah. So USDC and Tether, the actual tokens by contract can be frozen by the Circle Corporation or Tether. So at the behest of the government, they can freeze certain funds, which, you know, like I can understand the rationale for why they want to freeze them. Like, let's say, you know, your money, you know, or let's say an exchange gets hacked and, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars are stolen. And then now it's like, okay, you know, if USDC can freeze it, then that stolen money can be essentially frozen, which it impacts it in a way that they can just simply destroy it in that sense. And then USDC can issue another, you know, $100 million or whatever got stolen. And on the balance sheet, there is, you know, fundamentally no difference, right? It's just a poker token, you know, poker chip sort of. So that's how that works. But the problem with having a lot of money floating around in that context is you can create censorship where it shouldn't happen to. So, for example, let's say you are, you know, protesting the, I don't know, invasion of Taiwan or something. I'm just making shit up, by the way, just, you know, whatever. And you're a protester there and you're like, okay, you know, a government can decide that they can force some company to shut down your cash because you're considered some form of terrorist, for example. Then that would be the case for censorship in that context. The problem is when you're trying to create decentralized systems, you can't have the base currency be censorable, which is why Bitcoin is not censorable. It's censorship resistant. And then you could create layer two solutions on top of that. Like, let's say, for example, the Visa network wants to operate on Terra. It could use the UST stablecoin, but it could basically freeze transactions that are going through its network for various reasons. For example, if a criminal stole your credit card or something and you want that, you want those transactions to be frozen or whatever. So that represents censorship, represents kind of a layer two situation that certain companies and certain entities might want to use for different settlement purposes. You don't really want to have that at the base layer, because then imagine if someone could just shut down your internet whenever they feel like it. It would be similar to that, right? It's one thing to say, a court order could happen and your internet could be shut down because DJ Ed is a criminal and can't use the internet and, gets closed down for some nefarious purposes. But you don't want to be able to. So it's one thing to say disconnect you from like one source of information, but it's another thing to just sort of like lock you up and not be able to even use your money at all, which is a very different problem, right? So and then to be able to do any kind of censorship without any due process, for example, becomes another big problem. And a lot of countries, like if you're in the United States, I think you're relatively speaking used to living in a country where there is substantial due process. And I know people bitch about everything, but the reality is that, like, for the most part, most people get a reasonable, fair shake. And if you don't think so, you'll just have to visit other countries to know what I'm talking about. Like, it can be a lot worse. And and those are the kinds of dangers that we're trying to solve for, is that you have to have censorship resistance at some level so that people can't simply take away your ability to eat whenever they feel like it.
I understand. So basically, let me see if I can reiterate. Essentially right now, like USDC or Tether, for instance, they can be frozen on the smart contract level where all along, whether you're in DeFi or TradFi, all those coins that they issued can be basically nullified.
Yes, precisely. Essentially, your wallet can be frozen from using that, transacting with that, with that token, essentially. So, because basically, Tether Tether and USDC are basically ERC-20 tokens, right? Is what they are.
Right.
So they're smart contract tokens. They're not the base currency of Ethereum. Like, ETH can't be censored, right? But tokens on that network can be censored. And that's what I'm saying. It's not that the Tether, it's not that censorship is always wrong. But there are situations where you don't, like, if you knew someone was going to, like, blow up your city or something, all of a sudden you're like, fuck, I think we need to censor that person. We need to figure out how to solve that problem. Sure. So sure. I think the reality is there are certainly circumstances where people want, for those type of events to be controllable. And I think regulated stable coins are going to have their niche, censorable stable coins, and maybe even some levels of CBDCs or commercial bank stable coins. They're going to have their utility, I think. I think, though, you need to have the existence of UST forces other stablecoin users and producers to think twice about too many shenanigans. And the reason is because you have an escape hatch if the need arises, right? That's the difference. So even if UST is not the only US pegged stablecoin in the world, it won't matter. Its mere existence creates essentially a game theory scenario where all other players have to sort of think about what they do.
I got you. I understand. And thanks for your service once again.
Cool. No problem. Hey, Nick, what's up? Yeah.
Hey, Seffy. Thanks for bringing me up. It's a good thing I listen to the Peanuts a lot when I was growing up so I can decode what you're actually saying, because you sound like the teacher in the Peanuts cartoons.
Oh, is it that bad? Yeah, when you're on speaker up here, it sort of screws people up, I think.
It's very bad. But
oh, shit.
My question, well, it's only for the people who are on the speakers. The rest of the people can hear everything. So, but the question I had is you had indicated that, you know, obviously we're going to get a pump and then there's going to be a retracement, pretty typical for something like this. The question I have is like when you were thinking about doing your exponential buys on the way down, at what, you know, let's just set the bar at 100. At what intervals are you thinking of purchasing, you know, what increments between the individual buys? And then when do you think you've like kind of hit the bottom, or do you already have a bottom in mind when you've hit the top?
I would say
kind of share your strategy on that.
A safe thought is that something like a 20% pullback generally deserves a small buy, in my opinion. Okay, so like you can start at 20% and lower, I think. If you're trying to be really conservative because you already have a bunch of Luna and you're not too worried about it anymore, maybe you pick a 30% drop. So it doesn't matter where the top is. Today could be the top, right? Or next week or whatever. It doesn't matter. You just pull when you start seeing a 20 to 30% pullback, then you start paying attention. Does that make sense? So you're not like, you don't have to necessarily go in and buy some right now. You could leave it as UST if you want to or whatever. And we're assuming that you're getting yield off of like something, bonded Luna or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So because your alternative would be just to keep arbing Luna, bonded Luna, and, you know, you're making 2% every, 24 days approximately? That's not bad. So an argument can be made, just do that for the coming year and call it a day. That's quite a lot of money either way. So, quite a lot of earning potential just by doing that alone.
So just I just want to make sure, because you were breaking up a little bit, if the top, and I'm not saying this is, but if like just say the top is 100 and we start to see a retracement, you wouldn't start considering buying till you're at like 70, or would you consider at 80?
With this move, I would say probably anything below 80 at this point, I would get more. Yeah. So okay. Like, that's because we've already formed multiple volume floors, you know, like 60 to 70 just becomes much less likely now. So therefore you're going to wind up just simply having capital sitting, doing nothing. If you don't start getting in at some point. Right. So I think at this stage, just looking at where we are in the overall market and Luna, where we are, I think, yeah, if you're looking again to get some more, it like 80 is probably the where I'd look. It's different if someone's showing up here and they're brand new and they don't have any Luna and they're like, what's going on here? Should I get some? That's a trickier thing, because on the way up, it's like, how aggressive do you want to be? You probably don't want to be too aggressive. There are situations where you're going to kick yourself and you're like, wait, I wish I got it at this price, and look, it went to that, you know. Probably if you are brand new, probably just a regular normal dollar cost average at this moment, until you see some sort of top form and then some sort of new bottom form, and then you can get more aggressive. Does that make sense? Even if you give up some possible upside right now, a simple DCA, which was pretty good, because even if, not only that, but remember the Luna to bonded Luna, you're going to get 2% discount if you can get it on Astroport. And then you can use that bonded Luna as collateral if you drop right now. So if I was brand new, what I'm doing is I'm going and getting some right now and then using that as collateral to buy up to maybe 50% more if I have a drop of at least 20%, something like that. And if it doesn't drop, I won't use it as collateral. I'll just hold on to it and then get the yield from the bonded Luna, right? And then if it goes... you know, so there's different tactics you can use depending on how comfortable you are with things. The other option would be like at this point, we've kind of come back to an all-time high, formed essentially a cup formation. Maybe you'll get a 20% retracement again. Maybe you won't, like what they call cup and handle. You could arguably just say like, you know, get some and stake it and call it a day too. That's another option at this price range. So, you know, don't overthink it. It might be the right answer. So anyway, yeah, there's, it depends on people's different time horizons and whatnot. Let's see here. Winter, what's up, man?
Oh, hey, it's a couple things. I guess Ethereum actually has been censored to some degree and probably can be still by, you know, Vitalik and the gang if they feel like it. That's a minor issue. But the other thing is, as far as I understand, the Thor swap, they guarantee against impermanent loss if you hold it for 100 days. Have you thought about that at all? Do you think that's worthwhile? Do you think that makes any sense? Or is that a moot point?
No, it's super interesting. Like, that's what people are saying, that maybe the Luna rune pool may be one of the most lucrative pools out there today because of this. And actually, the Luna UST, same thing, because they're protecting you from impermanent loss if you hold long enough. It's super interesting. Definitely one of the most interesting LPs out there right now. So I
can attest to that. I've contributed to the BTC Rune and ETH Rune pool for over 8 months now, and so
tell us about it.
Yeah, lived through the hack as well. That happened a few months back. So it's not been a good experience. I mean, frankly, because the platform was kind of not polished at the time I got in. I think it's in a much better shape now. Very confusing to use. Hopefully they fix that. It's not, I mean, if you like Anchor, it's nothing like that. It was complicated. I think they're trying to fix a lot of that, frankly. But the core proposition is, of course, very, very interesting. We know that already, that, you know, to be able to do native swaps across chains. I don't know. I know they give you impermanent loss protection, so I'm well past my 100 days to get that now. The way it works is, so I've not withdrawn the liquidity yet. It's been over 8 months. So I don't know whether I'll get, like, until I withdraw, I won't know whether I got back what I would have lost in impermanent loss. But what I can say is that they have a pretty nifty tool in there to see what you made. And they have a little in the sort of the summary of, how your investment is performing. They show you a line for impermanent loss and tell you what you expected to be compensated for impermanent loss. I've not done the math on whether it's exact or not, but surely they do intend to give you any loss you might have made. So
in other words, part of the incentives is a long tail kind of thing where instead of giving the incentives up front, they're giving it as an impermanent loss protection, I guess, and it's just packaged differently.
It's at the end. I believe you won't see it until you withdraw your liquidity.
Yeah, got it.
Yeah, but there is, they have a Thor yield. I think there's a link to a Thor yield website, which sort of links to your wallet, which shows you the details of your investment, how much the loss is, and, you know, how much you expect to get compensated for. So I think it's a pretty nifty idea. I think if it does what it says it does, I think it's a no-brainer, frankly. And you don't have to wait 100 days. Apparently, I think it's 1% per day for 100 days. So if you withdraw after 30 days, maybe you get 30% impermanent loss protection.
Yeah, there's some interesting mechanics behind it. Definitely worth researching. I haven't used it yet. I was waiting to see about possibly going the maybe some Loon Runa route over there, but I hadn't really thought it through. And part of what I'll do is I'll probably, if I'm going to experiment with it, I'll just take some Luna that I get for free using the Luna bonded Luna arbitrage opportunity, and then like convert some of that to Rune, and then, you know, and then maybe enter the pool using that tactic. So in other words, using sort of house money that I've already gotten and then like deploy it for a slightly different risk profile. It might be interesting.
Yeah,
especially with the impermanent loss protection, it could be really, really, one of the better LPs in theory. Assuming, yeah. Oh, by the way, the hack problem you mentioned. So, you want to like, can you define what happened there, and then like, did you lose any money in that process?
I believe a whole ton of ETH was stolen. I'm not sure whether it was ETH or other coins as well, but I believe it was ETH. Probably around September timeframe last year. They launched the website during the summer. I'm specifically talking about Thor Swap, which works on top of Thor Chain, which is the protocol. And And I went in with the, you know, and contributed to two pools. There was a hack around September timeframe. A ton of ETH was lost. They tried to manage the. They realized that the platform was not ready for prime time, given the how complex it is. That what they're trying to solve. So they actually had these cap limits, as they're called, on the platform. So it's not that similar to what Mars is doing, for example. So it's not that our Edge protocol is doing. It's not that you can just go in and throw in $1 billion worth of liquidity. They managed it at about 100 million or so. So that helped mitigate the loss because there wasn't as much money in the platform when the hack happened, but a ton of ETH was lost. And that hurt the Rune token. It hurt the credibility of the platform quite a bit. And they just hunkered down, basically shut it down. Essentially, you couldn't do any more swaps. They got some auditors in. They did a whole lot of dev work since between September and now. And now I think it's sort of live again. Fortunately for me, I never touched my liquidity throughout this process, through the hack. I just let it be there. And I think they made good on it. So nobody lost any real money. No user lost any money.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, great. Yeah.
Can you?
And Andy, do you have a comment about the Thorchain scenario?
Hey, Seffy.
Or even the Luna. What's your opinion of the Luna rune pairing that is emerging? You think that's a good idea?
Yeah, I think it's going to be really exciting. I mean, I've been a Thorchad for a long time and holding Rune for a long time, and then, you know, been joining your guys' spaces for a number of months and watching the emergence of Terra. So a lot of the Thorchads are very excited to see the pairing of these two and put native UST and Luna on Thorchain. I agree with you. I think Luna Rune is probably the best LP pair for someone like me that wants to see gain on both of them. You know, what's interesting is that Luna's got a little more price appreciation under its belt right now than Rune. So you may see the, you know, Rune price going up and it's selling your Rune to buy more Luna. But if Luna moons, then you might see the reverse. You might sell Luna to get Rune as it balances out. But either way, you'll end up with more of them. The way impermanent loss protection works is you're never under what you would have been if you just hodled both coins, not in the amount of the coins, but in the dollar value. So, and they show you LP versus hodl, and you're up 10%, 20%, or you're down 10%, or what have you. And it's 1% per day that accrues up to 100 days, at which point you will never have less value when you withdraw than you would have had if you'd held both coins. And if you liked one coin more than the other, at that point, you could just sell whichever one you ended up more of and buy the other one. So, it, you know, Thorchain itself is a really powerful system. I know you guys have been looking at it and learning more about it and stuff. I think UST on it as a stable coin makes a ton of sense. We think there's probably a likelihood that DOE will put some of the Bitcoin LFG reserves to work as an LP in Thorchain, because why wouldn't he, right? And make Bitcoin yield better.
I believe DOE's, I think he owns Rune too, by the way. So I think
he probably does. He's been a big of Thorchain for a long time and has said that he will participate as soon as it goes live. So we know that. I just don't know for sure. A lot of people have been asking, hey, are you going to make your Bitcoin in the LFG reserve yield bearing by putting it to work on Thorchain? Probably there's a possibility, you know, that he does that. In terms of the hack, nobody lost any money. They have launched Thorchain, building different chains and adding to the network on ChaosNet, which they call specifically in advance of mainnet, because they know that it's got its trading wheels on, there are capped LP amounts available, and they know that you can't really test these networks until you go live, just because of the complexity of it. So sure enough, somebody found an ETH bug. It was something in the ERC contract that they were able to dupe and withdraw funds that weren't actually available. So what the Thorchain developers and Nine Realms Capital and others did was immediately implement a host of security measures, things like if there's a large withdrawal, they have the ability to pause. They have just a whole slew of security features now that regardless of what happens in the future, because you can't anticipate everything, there's a lot more safety built into the network itself. And then they have much more secure network, a 24-hour active offensive security team working, ForSec, they call it. Bunch of stuff. So that hack actually was painful, but it happened at a really good time because the market was down, the network was small, and it really forced them to prioritize security. So nobody lost any money in that. The Thorchain treasury was able to refund everybody. And the reason the treasury is there, the reason ChaosNet is there, is specifically for that type of circumstance. So it was, you know, painful, but the timing was good.
Yeah, they've had their trial by fire, in other words, and now it's like, absolutely, you're better for it.
Yeah. So indeed, we're all really excited to see UST join the network and these two communities be stronger together.
Yeah, Andy, you did a much better job of explaining that. Thanks. One thing I'll add to the community is those of you who like Luna for the, you know, I think Sefi mentioned this earlier, for the price deterministic model, should definitely look into Luna if that's your thing, because I think it's quite an amazing token. Obviously, for various reasons, it hasn't performed well in the last year, but it trades at an amazing discount right now. But check it out. The tokenomic model is quite, it's not the same as Luna, but it's similar and I'll let you go do your research individually, but it's very interesting. And so it's not a farming token. It's very different. So if you like Luna for what it is, it's worth looking into Luna as well.
Yeah, the fact that it's not simply a farming token is what's interesting to me, versus the slightly different model of how Osmosis works, as far as for now, at least, it's a bit more of a farming token. So yeah, non-farming tokens that generate their valuation from, you know, not just sort of like arbitrary tokenomics, I think is powerful. So in that respect, like both Luna and Rune have some of those characteristics. And to me, that makes them an interesting LP pair, because I think the thing about long-term in DeFi is, liquidity providers take a tremendous amount of risk providing LPs for shitcoins, and you can do that on Binance Smart Chain and these places for a while, and then people get bored when the yields go down, or the price of the coin just doesn't, you know, have any relationship with reality, and the price is dropping. The LP provider risk is just too high to be pairing with a good coin like a layer one Apex token or coin with like some random shit coin. And that's where the problem is that comes along. And that was sort of like a lot of fun for people for a couple of years, you know, playing in these various like bullshit yield farms. But eventually you come to the realization that, wait a minute, like, why in the hell would I want to provide liquidity for these things without enormous incentive? And what that ends up creating is either some kind of Ponzinomics type of situation, or you wind up with a situation where eventually protocols decide they have to just provide their own liquidity. So the protocol itself that has a new token better well have a, you know, venture capital backing or some sort of cash backing or fundraise to develop that protocol liquidity. So we've spoken to Jonathan, for example, with Levana Protocol, and what he's doing is they had a whole NFT project, right, in order to essentially exert kind of a fundraise to bootstrap that protocol's liquidity for leveraged assets. And otherwise you wind up with some sort of like useless farm token, and the system ends up not being sustainable. You don't have enough, you just don't develop enough revenue early on in those kinds of systems to like bootstrap everything and make it work. That's why I'm interested in the Rune Luna pairing and what's happening there. But yeah, thanks for filling us in, Andy, and Analytic. Let me grab R. Pelosi on.
Yeah, I needed your advice on an LP pair I'm in, Loop Luna. So I got in at the top, pretty much Loop at like 35 cents. So obviously I would have been better off holding just Luna. I put in like 600 Luna about like 2 months ago. So I'm seeing some like heavy permanent loss, obviously. I'm just wondering if it's better off if I hold it and it can level out.
What's your rewards APR on the Loop token right now?
It was been fluctuating like, you know, most do, but it's pretty high. It was at 100, like 80 at one point. It went to like in the 300s.
Is that right now in a Spectrum Auto Compounder, or is that like just a regular LP?
It's a regular LP.
What are you doing with your loop tokens as they come in? Are you putting them back into the pool? Or are you, what are you doing with them?
Yeah, I was putting it into UST, and then I regret not buying more Luna with it now. So I've kind of had it sitting in Anchor. Didn't make any moves. I kind of regret that.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not too big of a fan of doing. I'm not too big of a fan of doing Luna LPs. I think the one, at least, that looked interesting to me on Loop was the AUST Loop. I'm sorry, the AUST Luna pairing. And the reason is because your AUST is going up in value, so at least you get that 20% yield on that side. And then you have the Luna UST pairing, and then whatever incentives you're getting. Typically, though, LPs don't work well for an asset that you're super bullish on, because the relative impermanent loss doesn't make it really worth it a lot of times. So I'm not personally a fan of, I think Donku's of the same impression as me. We're not that big of a fans of the like anything pairing against Luna for that reason, unless you believe it's a token with a very high value accrual model. And I don't know Loop's tokenomics very well to be able to tell you one way or the other. The only Loop I have is, I think I have a Pylon gateway sitting there for the last, I don't know, getting close to a year, where it was accumulating Loop tokens using their like almost like dollar cost averaging kind of protocol. So I have some Loop, but basically I've suffered no impermanent. I haven't suffered any loss getting it, and I'm not using it as a rewards token. I just sort of, I didn't know very much about Loop at the time, and I thought Pylon Gateway was a good way to go. As far as like, yeah, what to do with your position now? I don't know. It depends. I think it might be okay if you're taking your yield and you're using it for something. Like, let's say you just get more Luna with it. That might be fine. I think Terra alts in general are probably going to go up if Luna goes up. Why does that happen? Because everyone is basically Luna rich and looking for the next big, you know, next big bang for their buck. So you might see a substantial amount of people taking leverage on Anchor and just buying everything, which typically happens. Everything sort of just goes up together. You know, again, I don't know that Loop is going to be a beneficiary of that, but I think it's a possibility. So one possibility is to leave everything alone as it is, because you've already had a lot of the impermanent loss already, right? So at this point, like, your pool already bought you more Loop token. You may, maybe, I don't know how big your position is, but you may be fine just leaving it alone and just taking your Loop tokens and buying more Luna with it. And that helps mitigate the impermanent loss ultimately.
I started with about 300 Luna. Oh, no, 600. So yeah, 600 Luna was my starting. It would basically lost half its value, right? If I would have left in Luna, it would be like 60k versus 30k right now. But I had some. I was in the LP on the Ethereum side. I started providing liquidity in like June. It was a protocol called Alliance Block, and I don't know if they had a different like algorithm on their LP, but yeah, they had way less impermanent loss. They kind of talked about how Burr bragged about how their liquidity mining as a service had no impermanent loss. So I guess one other question is just about like LPs in general. Are they all the same, or they, do you see different kind of like coded, you know what I'm trying to say, like different LP algorithms?
Like, there's no system that's going to have like no possible losses, because obviously like when you enter into an LP, you're essentially entering into a trade, because the system is going to basically function as rebalancing something that's going up for something that is not going up. So ultimately you're entering into a type of trade, and the question you have to ask yourself really is, what happens if one of these assets goes up? What would I rather have more position in? What happens if the incentives go down so that they're no longer mitigating your losses? You know, for an LP, I think with a high risk situation, you want like 200% APY kind of numbers, like crazy numbers, to basically mitigate your volatility risk. If you are talking about two assets that you, one of which you like a lot, one of them maybe not so much, or maybe one's a stable coin, I think you get out okay with that, with maybe like a somewhere between, you know, 80 to 100% APY, depending on how bullish your volatile coin is. And then if you're talking about, and again, don't hold me to those numbers. That's just sort of approximations of what I'm kind of eyeballing when I look at these things. If I think that both coins could go up, examples would be like an Osmo Luna pool, or like a Osmosis Atom pool, or something like that, like, or a Rune Luna pool, like we just talked about, then I think you're probably okay, because then what will happen is the coin that you, that's going up will get sold on the way up to buy the coin that's down. And hopefully that coin, hopefully it's counter, if it's not cyclical, meaning they don't go up together. If the other one goes down while the other one's going up, you're getting another, both, you're getting more of the coin that's down. And essentially you didn't mind owning both coins, and therefore you win either way, right? It functions as a, almost like a rebalancer bot, and it works out. So I think it's fine to be in LPs if you don't mind being in both the coins that you're in, right? That's the only reason you should be LPs, in my opinion. There are maybe professional people that really know what they're doing with LPs that, you know, may take that to additional levels, but and certainly there's way better people at LPs than me, by the way. This is just my take on the thing. You can lose a lot of money in LPs if you have a coin that performs really badly against the other one too, as you've noticed, apparently. So that is something to keep in mind. Also with LPs, you might want to think too, that's where the technical analysis comes in. If both the coins that you're interested in LPing are both down big time, then your downside risk is mitigated to a substantial degree into getting an LP. Because if you don't have that much more downside risk, it's sort of flat and you're not subject to a whole lot more downside risk. Does that make sense? It's like entering any other trade idea in that sense. It's not that different. You can't just assume that the LP yield's going to handle your downside risks at any given moment, depending on how long you feel like being on that LP. So
I had another question on like the rewards on these LPs. Do they come from the token emission schedule? Where are they built into the tokenomics, usually the protocols? Do they expire at some point?
Yeah, there's usually time periods and there's formulas to the LPs. Like if they know they want a certain amount of liquidity, then they will incentivize that, right? And if the the incentives have lots of different mechanics behind them, and they vary for every LP. I would say they vary even on the same platform, but sometimes you'll notice that they vary in mechanics from platform to platform. Different LP, different DEXs and whatnot will have different ideas as far as how much they're giving back to the LP provider. Like right now, if you look at Prism, for example, the LP yields are fairly high, and they're based on the transactions on the network, sort of like TerraSwap has. The LP yield is not incentivized in either of those cases by inflationary yield, and that's a different style of LP. The you're not getting paid in some sort of inflationary token; you're just getting paid in the pairing. And that generally helps to mitigate some of the risk as well. But again, even then, I'd rather be an LP with two coins that I really like versus a stable coin pairing that I'm not as interested in. Now, if you are bearish on Luna, you could do it like Shigeo does, which is like he might enter an LP, because if you enter a 50-50 LP with like UST Luna, like let's say today, and the price of Luna drops, then you wind up with more Luna because it buys more Luna on the way down, right? So, you know, it's almost like an LP with a stable coin is almost a bearish position on the underlying coin, but not so bearish that you think it's going to go to zero or like, you know, not come back up, right? So it's like it's no different than getting a stable coin unstable coin pairing is no different than getting into a rebalancer bot. Ideally, you want to get into it mid-market with a reasonable chance of the price going down so that it basically pays the yield for waiting. But now you're getting a benefit from waiting instead of just having riding the price of the coin down, assuming that you expect that the price of the coin comes back up again to break even. And then you could exit the LP in theory in that context. You pocketed the LP yield, but you exited before any serious and permanent loss to the upside. So, or some people like Shigeo, what he does is he exits the if you're in an LP and the price drops a lot and you have more Luna in a Luna UST LP, he'll just exit at that point because now he has more Luna and then that's the end of it, right? He'll just hold from that point onward. So LPs become like, you know, either something you do long term or become almost like a weird trading position where you have to think of the mechanics of it and then trade it accordingly. So that's my take on that. It's LPs are kind of complex for people to really wrap their head around as far as like the trading element of it, right?
Yeah, I was providing it for like 6 months on the Ethereum side. I noticed that when I exited the position, I had it came out with like more coins within the LP because they kept, you know, fluctuating, which was interesting.
Let me get Pat on here last, and then I've got a jump because my wife's getting home and we've got an anniversary today. So we're gonna go do other things, but Pat, go ahead. What's up, man?
Nothing much, just kind of hopped in actually and requested to speak. But yeah, I heard there's some talk about impermanent loss, and hopefully those of you guys who are aware, we surpassed XRP and I am stoked about it. Yeah, hopefully you guys are farming out there with Astroport and Prism and all the new stuff that's kind of coming out.
We didn't quite stay above XRP for very long, so we're working on it.
Oh, I actually didn't see that. I shouldn't say lost, but got deflipped again, but I think it'll come.
Yeah,
deflipped, no doubt.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, we were watching that today and just having fun, and people just asking different questions and we're just sort of covering different things, random stuff. Yeah. Like Outlet came up earlier, you know, in terms of on-ramping and things like that as well. So we've covered a lot of different ground today.
Always good. Always good to hear.
Cool. Yeah. Nothing too special. Yeah. Hopefully everyone has fun today. I'm going to drop off because I've got to get going. Lucky. Thanks for hanging out too. Everyone's successful and, you know, is able to use some of this information somehow to your advantage.
Thanks, Duffy. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Catch up next time, guys.
Thank you.
Hey, Duffy. Hey, thanks. By the way.
Bye. Yeah, sure.
Thursday, if we can do the Prism thing, I'd love to do that with you, the walkthrough.
Thursday meaning tomorrow?
Tomorrow at 9:30 Eastern. I was going to do like a beginner's guide to Prism.
Okay.
If you can make it.
Let's catch up. Yeah, tomorrow sometime, figure that out because make sure that my wife doesn't have a reason to murder me tomorrow evening for anything.
Yeah, tell her it's important.
We do that. Okay.
All right,
guys. Have a good day. All right. Catch you later.
Thanks for checking out another episode of The Ether. That was part 3 of a 3-part CeFi space, Luna Terra Again, recorded on Wednesday, March 9th, 2022. This episode of The Ether was brought to you by Orbital Command, a community validator on Terra dedicated to educating, expanding, and promoting the Lunatic community. Take advantage of their Terra Luna Intel report on Telegram, which brings you the hottest news and updates on all things Terra each and every day. Find it using the link in the show notes. You can also support their community efforts by considering them next time you're delegating or redelegating your Luna. Find out more at orbitalcommand.io. This episode of The Ether was also brought to you by Luart. Luart is the first gamified NFT platform built on the Terra network. Luart provides a seamless minting and trading experience, all while earning you rewards just for being a user. Be sure to follow them on Twitter and join the community in the Discord server for the most up-to-date news and announcements regarding all the hot new NFT launches, platform upgrades, and new projects hitting the secondary marketplace. Are you ready to put your helmet on and join the movement? Find out more at luart.io. This episode of the Ether was also brought to you by WeFund. WeFund is a community crowdfunding cross-chain incubator on Terra, and it's the first launchpad that implements a milestone funding release system to protect investors. All money raised for projects is deposited in Anchor Protocol, and it's refundable, and all decisions are based on community voting power. WeFund is community-focused and designed to be a user-friendly experience for both project creators and investors. Be sure to follow them on Twitter and join the Telegram for more information. Links are in the show notes, and check them out online at WeFund.app. TerraSpaces appreciates the support from all our sponsors. For TerraSpaces.org, I'm Finn. Thanks for listening. Rolling down the street in my 6'4". I never had a 6'4". A kid can wish though. I snapped a wishbone and grabbed a fistful. Chilling with the dopey, this a weed is all I wish for. I'm feeling blissful. I got a missus, my ginger always down to ride, no matter what the mission. I'm singing this song. Got a couple albums out. We do alright, but it ain't really shit to write home about. Like to feed the fishbowl, keep my stories mystical. I like my beats boom bap and rap to be lyrical. I'm feeling cynical, craving a little ritual. Save my place in line while I try to find a miracle. I keep looking and looking and looking, but never find nothing. We've been lied to, thinking this surprise of the super secret lies. Motherfucker sneak inside, going dark now. Believe me when I say this shit is do or die. Going dark now, believe me when I say this shit is do or die. Going dark now, believe me when I say this shit is do or die. The trenches, trying to stay offensive. Trespassing here like this land looks expensive. Ain't no time like the present. Trying to stake a claim, just make sure your claim stays away from all these other claims. We're almost kinda running out of land here. Living in the day of the dead, and it's damn weird. Same teams, y'all, we just trying to get a bite to eat. A little rest saved up, waiting for my time to sleep. Head down, middle fingers up, yo, I'm wide awake. Never hesitate to stay about 100 miles away. Seven time and space, while the wrecking ball the place. I expect you all to play, running marathons today. When the sick get sicker and the rich get richer, it might be about time to rearrange our dinner. Fix the system, the shit, it's all nixed. Waking up early, gonna suck today's.
Hey, man. Gonna suck today's right. Dick. That's what I'm talking
going
about.
Dark now, believe me when I say this shit is do or die. Going dark now, believe me when I say this shit is do or die.
Clark's a great guy, man. He's totally gonna take care of Angela, man. He's great. He's a wonderful lab partner, so it's gonna be cool. We'll keep an eye on her.
Why don't you go fuck yourself, you weird little prick?
I'm a teacher, okay? You can't talk to me like that, guy.
I'm not a student, so I can say whatever the fuck I want.
Terra Spaces.